Hello and welcome to Sunday Salon for Sunday, April 27th in the year 2003. I'm Larry Bensky. KPFA and Pacifica Radio have been on the air since 1949, but I think it's fair to say that this is probably the first time that one of our bosses has been in these walls with us, NFCC Commissioner. He is Jonathan Adelstein. Yesterday he conducted 6 hours of hearings in San Francisco City Hall, which we broadcast here on KPFA, thanks to the cooperation of KPOO in San Francisco. Hearings about media consolidation, the same topic that we broadcast back in January from Columbia University. Some of you may have been listening then. The rulemaking and the review of the Telecommunications Act strictures against joint ownership by large corporations of television, radio, and newspapers. That's one of the things that's on the FCC's busy docket these days and is causing a great deal of public interest. What is the interest about and what can we do about it? Well, that's what we're going to be discussing here in our first hour today on Sunday Salon. And in our second hour, we'll be bringing in Gus Newport, who is the newly selected KPFA station manager, the 18th manager that we've had, I'm told by Pacifica historian Matthew Lassar, since our beginning back in 1949. Gus Newport will be here, talk about why he's undertaking this immense challenge of being a station manager of a place like this. And of course, there'll be plenty of time in both hours for your phone-ins for both of our guests. Stay tuned. The Federal Communications Commission has 5 commissioners, and by custom, 3 of them represent the majority in the presidential selection, in this case Republicans, and 2 of them the minority. Now we have a majority of Republicans, of course, on the Federal Communications Commission, a minority of 2 Democrats, and before them are many things. They regulate so many things that I think most of the public has no clue as to the immense docket that the commissioners and their staff are charged with. But the most visible is the allocation and the I don't want to say policing, but the surveilling of broadcast properties. Who owns them, what they can and cannot do, how they get traded and sold, etc. And as listeners to this program and this network are probably more aware than anybody else in this country, media consolidation has become a plague upon the planet, with the Rupert Murdochs and the Clear Channels of the world controlling more and more of the precious frequencies. Could that get even worse? Critics fear that it could under the free market philosophy of the present chair of the Federal Communications Commission, Michael Powell. But if this happens, it will not be without opposition from both the public and from at least 2 of the FCC commissioners, one of whom is with us here today, Jonathan Adelstein. Thank you very much for, I think, being the first FCC commissioner to ever visit this historic frequency, the nation's first community radio station.
Well, it's about time that you have an FCC commissioner here, considering the storied history of this station and all that you've contributed to public broadcasting.
Thank you very much. It's an honor, and I'm glad you were able to clear some time on your schedule for us to be with you today and for our listeners to dialogue with you, and we will be opening our phones in a little bit of time. Many of our listeners were, of course, listening yesterday as we broadcast all day long, as I said, the hearing that you presided over in San Francisco. What impression did you take away from the panels of people who spoke to you and the many, many people who came to the public microphone to contribute their contribution? What most sticks in your mind that you're going to bring back to Washington?
The overwhelming impression was that not one person spoke up to say, I want more concentration in media. I want fewer voices to be able to be heard over our nation's airwaves. I'd like to see more of the same kind of garbage that we're getting over the media today. They said quite the opposite. They said they're alarmed by this. Some of them weren't aware that this was about to happen. And those that found out about it were deeply concerned about the direction that it's taking. So I want to go back to the chairman on Monday. Tomorrow I'm flying back today to Washington right after this show, and I'm going to say to him, people are nervous out there. They're worried. They think this is the wrong way to go. And if you do this, I think that you'll have a political price to pay.
Let's back up for a second and give our listeners a little bit of background about you, Jonathan Adelstein, because I think it's fair to say that most federal commissioners aren't known to the public. And you, of course, may be known to many of our listeners in the Bay Area because you do have something of a Bay Area past. Although you're a native of South Dakota, you spent quite a few years at Stanford.
I sure did. I just love the Bay Area, and I was so glad to come back here and conduct a hearing here. And again, the quality of the dialogue we had at the hearing just exemplified everything great about the Bay Area. The people here are thoughtful, they're concerned, they're tuned in, and they activate and they mobilize when they're worried about something.
How did you get to be an FCC commissioner?
Well,
was that a childhood ambition of yours? Did you? Some people say, I want to be a firefighter, and others say, I want to be a baseball player, and you said, no, I want to be an FCC commissioner.
It certainly wasn't a childhood deal. It was a late-in-life revelation that there was a possibility, because when the president's from the other party, the Senate leader from the Democrats in this case, or it was the Republicans in the case of President Clinton, make the recommendation to the president as to who to nominate for the Democratic slots on boards and commissions. In this case, I happened to work for Senator Tom Daschle, who at the time was the majority leader of the Senate, and he was the person who got to make the recommendation, and I was working for him. And a lot of pressure was brought to bear on him by different people who wanted this job desperately, but ultimately they kind of canceled each other out, and I was the only one left standing at the end of that process, and I ended up that he picked me because he knew my work.
But your path to the commission was not a smooth one. In fact, there was a hold put on your nomination, something the Senate can do by a secretive act on the part of any senator. Nobody knows who put on the hold. And your nomination was held up for several months because it became one of those political trade-offs for a nomination that the Republicans felt the Democrats were blocking.
That's right. This one wasn't so secret. This one was national media. It was my 15 minutes of fame, which weren't my favorite way to have it. The day after Judge Pickering from Mississippi was defeated, Trent Lott, who was his good friend and sponsor and at the time the Senate Minority Leader, announced that he was going to oppose me because he knew that I was somebody that mattered to Senator Daschle. So it became quite a national scene with the involvement directly of the President of the United States and the Minority Leader and Majority Leader of the Senate wrangling over it. And I finally got confirmed 3 days before Congress adjourned in November.
So you've been on the commission only for, what, 4 or 5 months now?
That's right.
And here you are faced immediately with one of the biggest challenges that the commission could possibly face, which is deciding who can own one of the rare broadcast properties on the TV and FM dial, as well as mixing it with newspapers. And what we heard yesterday in the course of the testimony to you sitting as a commissioner in San Francisco at the supervisor's chamber from the panel members as well as the public is that a lot of people became especially exercised over the past few months by seeing what happens when quasi-monopoly control is granted to organizations like Rupert Murdoch's TV empire and the Clear Channel radio empire at a time when public discourse and dialogue is very, very much necessary, i.e. the ultimate time when the nation's about to go to war. And what we got instead was a barrage of propaganda.
That's right. This is an overwhelmingly large proceeding that we're doing. It's the biggest review of media ownership rules in the history of this country. And nobody, for the most part, even knows this is going on. I kind of liken this to going right to the Super Bowl without even having the opportunity for people to watch the full season. We're doing the biggest review. Nobody knows what we're about to do. The public is going to be, I think, surprised by it when it happens because the chairman has indicated that he wants to move forward on June 2nd no matter what happens. He's been asked by leading members of Congress to give the Congress and the public an opportunity to respond before he finalizes these rules, and he said no. I asked him to put at least something out to the public, to give them some inkling of what's about to happen, and he told me that he wouldn't do it. He's committed to this June 2nd date, and this isn't some interim thing. This isn't some, well, let's sort of test something out or put out a proposal. This is, we're going to finalize these rules. And once that happens and you allow media companies to merge and get even bigger than they already are, they're going to do it. They're going to do it right away. So June 3rd, the investment bankers are already licking their chops to watch the mergers take place.
Your Federal Communications Commission fellow minority commissioner, Michael Copps, was in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, and he was quoted as saying that, or he was quoting a Pew Center for the Excellence in Journalism study, saying that they'd done a survey and that 72% of the people in the country had heard nothing at all about FCC media ownership debates, and only 4% of the people said they'd heard a lot about the debate.
That's right. I mean, there really hasn't been any notice of this on the network television. We've not gotten the kind of coverage that we need, and so that's one of the reasons that you don't see a lot of people that are knowledgeable about this. I mean, Commissioner Copps has done a great job, I think, of trying to get the word out to the public. As a matter of fact, I held the hearing here on Friday, and he's holding a hearing in Los Angeles on Monday at 8:30 at the USC Davidson Conference Center at the Annenberg School at USC to hear from people in the Los Angeles area about what they feel about this. So we're doing this all over the country. We're getting universally negative reviews from people about the prospect of more concentration when we talk to them about it, but they're not hearing about it on their media.
Yes, our Los Angeles listeners, once again, we want to stress that that is tomorrow at the USC Davidson Executive Conference Center from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., the USC Center for Communication Law and Policy presenting a public forum on media consolidation, where are we and what's next? And I understand KPFK Los Angeles is going to be broadcasting some of that, taping some of it and presenting it at some later time. So some of our L.A. listeners may want to go over to USC for that conference tomorrow. One thing I missed yesterday, Commissioner Adelstein, was something that I'm perhaps one of the few people in this organization who's aware of, because I'm one of the few people with a commercial radio background. Almost everyone who was speaking yesterday on the panels and from the public was addressing the issue as if the most important thing is that the public have a right to a diversity of voices and a diversity of opinion. But there's another extremely powerful entity at work here, which is the owners of broadcast properties, who see these as businesses and who buy and sell and trade them according to how much money they can make. And they talk a very different language than the language that was being spoken during your estimable public hearing yesterday. And I think we have here what some people might refer to as a dialogue of the deaf, where people on one side are saying, you know, the way they see things, and people on the other side are saying, well, we give the public what they want. If we didn't, they would tune us off. We sell ads. We make money. Therefore, what's wrong with this picture? And the people on the other side are saying, what you're supposed to be doing is serving the public convenience, interest, and necessity according to the Telecommunications Act of 1934, and making money isn't in that act.
That's right. I mean, the companies are naturally going to want to merge. Naturally, they're going to want to seek efficiencies. Naturally, they're going to want to get bigger and swallow more and gain more control over the advertising market. That's just the way businesses are. And there's nothing wrong with that. This is America. This is a capitalist society. But the point of the government is to make sure that those airwaves, which are a limited resource and that belong to the people, are used in the interest of the public and not necessarily in the interest of the large corporations that seek to profit by using them. So we need to watch what they're doing. Now, of course, they say we give people what they want. They like it. We try to get higher ratings. Whatever we do is what people want. Well, I compare it to the McDonaldization of American media. Not all your listeners might like McDonald's. I happen to actually enjoy it from time to time. But I wouldn't want to eat that stuff every day. You need a balanced diet.
Go to the farmer's market.
That's right. Well, that's why your listeners listen to this and they're not listening to commercial radio. And commercial radio, as I listen to it as an amateur musician myself, I find it getting worse and worse, more homogenized, more McDonaldized. And, you know, occasionally I'll listen to it to catch a new song or something. But, again, that's a diet I certainly can't handle every day, not even on a regular basis, because I want to hear something different. I've had to turn to satellite radio to get some interesting music, and it's frustrating to me.
Well, I wish you lived out here. You could listen to our station, hear some interesting music. We play a lot of it. I wanted to point out that there is at least one more hearing coming up in the Bay Area about this. Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey from up in Marin-Sonoma area has been very interested in this question, and she has arranged for your fellow FCC Commissioner Michael Copps to be here. It'll be a hearing on media consolidation. It'll be held in San Rafael Monday, May 12th from 1 to 3 p.m. on the campus of Dominican University of San Rafael. That's Monday, May 12th, 1 to 3 at Dominican University of San Rafael, and we may be able to arrange to broadcast that one on KPFA as well. We're going to open our phones in a little while, but just let me ask you, Commissioner Adelstein, when people do what they do these days, which is find a site that is sympathetic to the cause that we're talking about here, like Media Alliance, for example, and they find a place they can click on and send a communication to the FCC. Chairman Powell, a while ago, I have a letter here he wrote to Senator John McCain saying that the FCC has already received 18,000 communications about this. Does it really matter if a person sends a 1 or 2 or 5 or 20 paragraph communication by email to an organization like the FCC? All of your emails are available on the FCC website. They can find out your web's address. Does that really matter, or is that just clicked off into cyberspace and it doesn't really count?
Well, it's a good question. I think it should count. I mean, we certainly listen to them, and that's why we came out here to listen to people. You mentioned www.media-alliance.org. I mean, that's some place where people can go to see what they can do. You know, people need to feel that they have some power over this. I wonder if they do. I feel frustrated myself as one of five votes on this that I might not be able to get my viewpoint across on this deal. So, you know, if people are frustrated, it's understandable, but they have to mobilize for knowing that even if maybe we lose this battle, which we might on June 2nd, that there's a longer-term war at stake here over who controls our airwaves and whether the public can contain the massive growth of these large companies and can find a way to make sure that their concerns are met, that local needs are met, that stories that are happening in the local community about people that are affected by them are covered, and not just these national conglomerates coming in and pushing out any local coverage of community events.
You know, I guess I'm skeptical, if not cynical, about this, but when I see these 18,000 communications and I see the hundreds of people who showed up yesterday and thousands of people who listened to the hearings here on KPFA and even more people who are listening today, I think to myself, how many of those people actually ever made a campaign contribution of any significance to any company in Washington? And then I look at what the vast media empires pour in to basically the Republican Party, but both parties, these days, of course, more the Republican Party. And I think to myself, where's the fairness? Where's the balance? Somebody who can arrange for $100,000 or $200,000 or $500,000 worth of special interest contributions to a political party or a politician, they're going to get access and they're going to get their say and they have power. And these people sending click, click, click email after email by the thousands, does it balance?
One of our witnesses yesterday at the hearing said a very profound quote you've all heard before, "We are many, they are few." And that's right. And I'm afraid in this case the few may prevail. And that's what contributes to that kind of cynicism. I've seen this time and again in Washington where there's issues like this that the broad public isn't at all enthusiastic about the direction that Washington is taking. But the very few large, powerful corporations in Washington are making a concerted effort using the smoothest possible resources, the best-paid lawyers. Former FCC chairmen are coming in to see me about this, paying them maybe $500 an hour, then paying maybe $100,000, $200,000 to come up with a study that says why it's good for the public if they get even bigger. And they overwhelm the process. They overwhelm Capitol Hill, so the Capitol Hill doesn't stand up to the FCC and say, what are you doing here? You're not doing what's in the public interest. You're doing what's in the corporate interest, because they also are subject to influences from these large media conglomerates. And as politicians, they're particularly nervous about taking them on because they want to get covered. And, you know, it's not enough to just be on KPFA. You've got to be on NBC, and you've got to be nice to Viacom. So it is a very difficult thing, and it is easy to see how people could become cynical. I'm fighting to not become cynical myself because I have a vote on this, and I've gone through hell to be able to get that vote, and I still am concerned about my ability to influence this process.
Your term expires this year, doesn't it? Am I correct in that?
Right, that's right.
And what's involved in getting reappointed? What's the normal term of the FCC? It's longer than 8 months.
It's normally a five-year fixed term.
Right.
And the president could renominate me and the Senate could reconfirm me.
Or he could get a tape of this program and say, what the hell are we doing having this guy at the FCC?
Well, I got to say what I believe,
Jonathan Adelstein is his name. He's a Federal Communications Commission commissioner. He presided over hearings yesterday in San Francisco Board of Supervisors, which we broadcast here on KPFA. And he is here for this hour to take your phone calls, your concerns, your questions, your insights. Our toll-free number from wherever you may be listening, 1-800-958-9008. That's 1-800-958-9008. I've warned him that this is Pacifica Radio. We don't call screen. We just find out where people are calling from by their name and city. And so we take what we get, but usually it's respectful and intelligent. And we'll be right back with your phone calls here on Sunday Salon. Stay tuned. KPFA and KPFK and KFCF with Sunday Salon. And we're going to go right to our callers now about the Federal Communications Commission and broadcast deregulation, starting with Ted in Los Angeles. Good morning, Ted.
Yes, I'd like to suggest to the people listening that the broadcast industry is one of the last industries that have a reasonable amount of unions available, and it's time for a general strike.
A general strike. Now, there's some words we don't hear all that often. But what about the unions? That's a really interesting point. The Communications Workers of America, which represent us here at KPFA and a number of other units around Pacifica, Commissioner Adelstein, has been very, very strongly opposed to consolidation of media because, among other things, tens of thousands of jobs are being lost.
That's right. The unions have been extremely active in fighting this. AFTRA, the radio and television workers, John Connolly, by the way, from AFTRA, will be down at the hearing in Los Angeles at 8:30 on tomorrow, Monday morning. They were out here at the hearing in San Francisco. We've heard from them across the country. They're concerned about jobs, and again, you know, that's an issue, but we're worried about the public interest, and here's why jobs matter. If you have a company merge, two companies merge, say one television station buys the other, and they wipe out the other television station's news staff, well, you've just eliminated one source of news and reporting in your town. It's gone, and you have one news staff reporting both. That's where the jobs are lost, and I'm concerned about the jobs, yes, but our job is to be concerned about that additional voice that's snuffed out so that people don't get news stories. So there's less competition between those two news staffs to get to the bottom of what's happening in the community or in the country.
I noticed yesterday you were mentioning, as you were chairing the hearings in San Francisco, that you saw only one television camera in the room, and it was from Channel 4, which is the least powerful of the local news outlets. It was left standing when the dance of network affiliation was done a couple of years back, and it lost its NBC affiliation, and it's barely surviving as an independent entity. But the three network-affiliated local television, four network-affiliated local television stations didn't send anyone to cover yesterday's hearing. Not a word about it in today's Hearstone San Francisco Sunday Chronicle. And you mentioned the fact that, you know, if the public is kept completely ignorant of this by the corporate media, how on earth are they supposed to fight the corporate media?
That's exactly right. There's no better case study than what happened yesterday, because it's the policy of the networks that they want to get bigger. They want to be able to buy more local TV stations. They want to be able to buy newspapers. So they want to be able to conglomerate even larger than they already are. Now, they, as a corporate policy, apparently could have affected the local coverage. This story wasn't heard on the networks. It was only heard on independent Cron here in San Francisco, because their corporate policy is they want to prevent the networks from getting bigger, because that would potentially interfere with them. Now, I'm not saying that's why they ran the story, but I'm saying that we have to question whether the other networks not covering the story was because they were concerned about what their owners would say. So journalists are being constrained potentially. Potentially there's self-censorship. We need to ask those questions. We need to get to the bottom of that, because the media are going to get bigger and bigger, and once this consolidation happens after June 2nd, it's going to be even harder to get voices like this heard or to get the media covered.
But of course, as you know, as a former teacher of political science at Stanford, among other things, and history, the history of this has been an incremental chipping away of the public interests sector in broadcasting. The fairness doctrine, gone. Caps on simultaneous broadcasting, gone. Ascertainment of the role of stations in the community, gone. Even record keeping, they tried to get that out so that stations wouldn't even have to preserve records of how many hours they broadcast of public affairs and news programming. Consolidation of ownership in. Consolidation of voice tracking so that people can use the same voice in various areas and pretend to be where they are in with absolutely no restriction. But the elimination of the fairness doctrine was, to me, the absolute opening of the floodgates, because that enabled the Rush Limbaughs and the Bill O'Reillys and the rest to not care, and for the people who own the stations on which they're broadcast to not care, however partisan and partial they might be, no more requirement for any kind of fairness and balance in broadcasting. The FCC traditionally has tried to keep hands off of content, except in certain cases like Pacifica versus Carlin, the Carlin case, U.S. versus Pacifica. Now, isn't it really going to be necessary to get back into the question of content regulation at some point, or these corporations will just continue to do what they're doing, what you've just been talking about, which is smothering important issues and or presenting completely partial accounts of others?
Well, it does appear that over the years, the FCC's dedication to making sure that broadcast stations are operating in the public interest and not just in their corporate interest has eroded to an alarming degree. The only thing we really have left to make sure that there's some diversity and some localism are our ownership rules, and they're about to do away with that last vestige of what was public interest and basically turn a lot of this over to the free market. Now, I believe in the free market, but I don't think this broadcast media is a place where there really is a free market, because you can't just go out and start your own radio station. You can't just go start a television station. You need a license from us, and you're using the public airwaves to do it. So you've got an obligation to give something back to your community. Your station does it well, but look at some of the commercial stations in this city and across the country. I can't imagine where their public affairs programming is.
If it exists, it's at 4 to 5 a.m. on Sunday for insomniacs driving home from all-night parties. There's very little of it left and very little news. I mean, when I started out in Bay Area broadcasting, every radio station pretty much, if it was a music station or whatever, had a full-scale local news department. Almost none of them do anymore. And, you know, you got a company like Clear Channel that owns 1,200 stations and prepackages news for every station from a central source. You get what you get. Our guest is Jonathan Adelstein, who is a Federal Communications Commission commissioner, one of the two dissidents on the board so far, facing the possible abolition of ownership restrictions that have been enforced for many years. Charlie